Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Could evolutionary science have led us to the brink of a monumental revolution in the way we think about ourselves simply because it's proven itself to be flawed? According to James Lefanu, our many scientific breakthroughs have left us with more and more questions than ever before. Perhaps there's more to us than cells and chemicals, more to us than materialistic science has actually told us. James Lefanu is a medical doctor and writer. His work has been published in prestigious journals like The Lancet and the Journal of the Royal Society of Medicine. His latest book is called Why Us? How Science Rediscovered the Mystery of Ourselves, and he's with us now. James Lefanu, welcome to Open House.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
Yeah. Good evening for us and good morning for you. James, when did you first realise that scientific naturalism, this idea that all of life can be understood in materialistic terms, that approach to life was wanting? When did you first kind of think that through?
Well, I think I've always thought it. My view has always been that, you know, there's no doubt that evolution happened. The whole history of the universe is an evolutionary history of things moving from the very simplest forms of matter to ever more complex, and there's no reason why that shouldn't extend into the natural world. My problem has always been that it explains too much. There's nothing, actually, that the theory of evolution doesn't explain. Mm-hmm. There's no aspect of the living world that you can't say, you know, the explanation is evolution. You know, you say, why do birds fly? Because they evolved to fly that way. Why do fishes swim underwater? Because they evolved that way. And I've always been sort of slightly skeptical that so simple an explanation, the evolutionary explanation, can explain so much. It drains life of its mystery and its wonder. Mm. Because, you know, any question you might ask about the living world, you think that you have the answer. Especially, you know, so much of the living world which is so wonderful and so beautiful and so profound. Mm. And it generates the illusion that, you know vastly more than you really do about these things.
Mm. You look at some of the greatest scientific breakthroughs that we've seen in the world over the last six decades, and yet you kind of say the fact is that they've left us with more questions than answers. You then focus on two particular scientific discoveries, and they really get you thinking. Number one is the Human Genome Project, and number two is brain imaging. Now, just briefly describe why those two projects left you with so many questions.
Well, trying to put it very simply, the thing about the last 60 years and the scientific advances of the last 60 years is that, taken together, they add up to one of the great supreme intellectual achievements of all time. Because for the first time in the history of our species, we can understand the whole history of the universe in our mind's eye, from the moment it started to the moment of the Big Bang, through the creation of the solar system and the evolution of our Earth and the emergence of life on Earth and the double helix and the DNA code and so on and so on. And I mean, it's extraordinary to think. I mean, I'm almost 60 now, but when I was born back in 1950, essentially we knew none of it. And we had some intimation of it. But the point about the last 60 years is that, as it were, it's brought it all together and consolidated. But it did leave unanswered, as it were, two fundamental questions. And they were, how is it do you get from the genes strung out along the double helix to the richness and diversity of the living world? Mm-hmm. And how do you get from the electrochemistry of the brain to the richness of the human mind? Mm-hmm. And these were the two great sort of unresolved questions. And really interesting thing about the last 10 or 15 years is that, in a sense, science has tackled these two fundamental questions. And what is really interesting is that round about, you know, the last 4 or 5 years, it's become clear that actually, for everything that science can know and tell us, it can't get at these two questions. Hmm. That actually, the gene strung out along the double helix can't get you to, you know, what it is that distinguishes a snowdrop from a tulip, from a mouse, from a frog, or from a human, and that the electrochemistry of the brain and the electrical activity of the brain, you can't translate that into our feelings and thoughts and our perception of the world. Mm. And they are, as it were, so for everything we know and can know, there are these two fundamental, it seems to be, irresoluble questions where the materialist explanation falls short.
This is Open House right across the nation. James Lefanu is with us, the author of Why Us? How Science Rediscovered the Mystery of Ourselves, theopenhouse.net.au for the podcast. So those two concepts in that you've just been talking about, how the Human Genome Project and brain imaging hasn't given us the answers we were looking for, it's given us even more mystery about the human person and the way we think and how life actually has come about. That leads you then to five or six big mysteries which you explore in the book, which I just think are fascinating, which you say just can't be explained by the materialistic scientific approach to things. Let me go through each one of those mysteries. In fact, I'll give you the name of the mystery, and you can explain it in simple terms and why you've come to that. Number one, you say, is the mystery of subjective awareness, that materialism doesn't answer that. Just explain what you mean.
Our subjective awareness is our awareness or understanding or perception of the world around us. I'm looking out my window and there's a green tree there and the sun is rising. I can hear the birds singing in the distance and smell of coffee coming up from downstairs and so on. There's that sense of, and these are all different sensations, different ways in which we, moment by moment, live and experience the world. And what the neuroscience has revealed and all these brain scans have revealed is that actually, you can look at people's brains when they're doing all these different things, seeing and hearing and listening and so on. And all you get, and all you can perceive, as it were, is this electrical activity in the brain. You can't actually get that sense of the quality of that subjective, or that feeling of subjective awareness. Hmm. And there's no way in which we can tell how, as it were, all those different sensations come together into a single coherent stream of consciousness, how they're all integrated together. What you can't get at is that subjective sense of what gives the richness, enormous richness of our sense of being in the world. Mm. So that's the mystery of subjective awareness.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, the second mystery that you say can't be explained by a materialistic view of the world is the mystery of free will.
The point about free will is when you, obviously, you know, if I decide to do something, like decide to pick up a cup of coffee, for example, or not pick up a cup of coffee, or decide to cross a road or not to cross a road and so on, my mind is working here to make that decision. I have this thought. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, a thought is an immaterial thing. It doesn't have substance. And I can change my thoughts from one moment to the next. And the question really is, how does something immaterial, like a thought, influence the material activation of my brain in order to make me, as it were, do one thing as opposed to another?
Yes.
And that is, it is otherwise known as the mystery of mental causation, how mind influences, and the non-material mind influences the material brain.
Yes, and if we come from a materialistic perspective, well, you've got a great problem there with thinking to begin with anyway, haven't you? Because it can't be reduced down to cells and chemicals and biology. Yeah, okay. The third one is the mystery of the richness and accessibility of memory. I think this one's a fascinating one.
Absolutely, sorry. Of course, because the richness of our lives stems from, you know, our sense of memory, our power of memory, our ability to recall things, you know, going back 30 or 40 years, and not just things, but events and the people that we've known, and also, of course, memory of facts. And there are a whole variety, three or four different types of memory. There's short-term memory and medium-term memory, long-term memory. There's memory for events, memory, autobiographical memory, memory of facts, and so on. We have absolutely no idea how these memories are stored in our brain, point one. And absolutely no idea how we can recall them in an instant from, you know, 30 or 40 years ago. Mm. And it's, although, you know, excuse me, one has this idea that somehow the brain is some glorified computer, that it must somehow or other be stored in there. How it is stored, and, you know, how one, as it were, recalls not just facts and thoughts, but how you can instantly recognize, you know, for example, a picture that you saw 10 or 15 years ago, your visual memory, or any of these. And so, essentially, we don't know how memory works.
Yes, yes, that's the long and the short of it. Just this week, actually, I was reading Alistair McGrath's book, A Fine-Tuned Universe, and I know that you've had some dialogue with Alistair McGrath as well. And I think it was in that book that I was reading also about the whole notion of memory. Now, given the fact that you're a medical doctor, you can fill me in on the details here. But isn't it true that every 7 years, the human body is pretty much a new body because our atoms basically shed away and they're replaced with others? Is that, that's right, isn't it?
Well, indeed. I mean, I think this, this is a really difficult thing, is that, for example, the chemicals in the brain, the neurotransmitters which connect one nerve to the other in the brain, and in which somehow other people think must be implicated in memory. The point is that they are essentially evanescent. You know, they are there for a millisecond, and then when they, as it were, perform their function, and then they get broken down and they get reused again and taken up by the nerves for the next time, as it were, the nerve fires and so on. And so there's this very terribly difficult question of how it can be that molecules like that, which only last for a second, can somehow or other be involved in the phenomenon of memory, which lasts for 40 or 50 years, or indeed the structure of the brain and the nerves itself, that actually we are born with more neurons than we end up with, and we sort of lose, nobody quite knows how many, but it is sort of 100,000 a year, they say, or something like that, as time passes. And yet, astonishingly, these memories remain intact over 40 or 50 years.
Yes, over all of that physical change that we go through, the memory still remains the same. It's really quite fascinating. James Lefanu is with us on Open House. His book is Why Us? How Science Rediscovered the Mystery of Ourselves. We're just talking about some of the question marks that Darwinian evolutionary scientific materialism, if you want to put it in that kind of technical way, doesn't answer about ourselves. It just doesn't have in it the capacity to answer these kinds of mysteries. James has been talking about the mystery of subjective awareness, the mystery of free will, the mystery of memory. And number four, James, you talk about the mystery of reason and imagination. Take us on.
Well, we share this world with tens of thousands of other species, each of whom have their own special sort of intelligence and their way of living and coping with the world, and that in itself is extraordinary. I mean, a fly might have a duck-sized brain, but, it can still do, a lot of pretty smart things. But the one thing that does distinguish us from our fellow creatures is that we have this power of reason and imagination, that we have the capacity to think about the world. And we have that capacity because of language, because we can describe our events, the things that occur to us or our experiences, and articulate them in words and sentences and so on, and think about thinking and then think about thinking again. And that, of course, is an extraordinary thing, because it means that it liberates our mind from just being so confined within our skulls and allows it to transcend time and space. So we can, in our minds, with power, reason and imagination, go back to the beginning of time or imagine its end. Or we can, as it were, we can imagine us, I could imagine myself in Australia just as you could imagine yourself in London. It liberates us and allows us to make sense of the world. And how that comes about, what is the nature of language, how this extraordinary capacity, which emerged essentially with our species, because as far as we can tell, although, our fellow creatures are capable of making rational decisions, they're not capable of abstract reason and thought, allows us to ask, essentially the profound philosophical questions, what are we doing here? Why are we here? What's it all about?
Yeah.
And all those things which, make our lives so interesting.
Yes, absolutely. And then the fifth mystery, you say, is simply the mystery of the self, which I guess is where all of these other mysteries are heading towards.
Well, that's it. I mean, I think the point is that one of the interesting things about, life is that, we know so much, and yet there's a tendency to overlook the most important thing of all, which is who we are, that personality, the character of ourselves or the people that we know. And this, in a sense, is constructed out of those things things that we were talking about: subjective awareness, memory, our decisions, the reason, imagination. And in the old days, up until about 100 years ago, people used to talk about the concept of the soul. And the soul was the person who you were and was, in a sense, just as real as your physical body. And in a sense, we know this. I mean, the person who I am is pretty much the same person who I was 40 years ago, and indeed the same as you. Mm. And it's this extraordinary ability of character and personality, who you are, to, as it were, change and mature over time, but essentially to remain the same.
Yes.
And this is who you are, your spiritual living person. In a sense, this concept of the soul has been driven underground over the last 100, 150 years by, the rise of the sort of materialist evolutionary perspective, because there's no way in which it fits into that. Science is reduced to saying that, we are nothing but the electrical activity of our brain, and that sense of self is an illusion that is created by our brain in order to give the impression that there's somebody in charge.
Yes.
But I would argue what neuroscience has done in the last 10 years is it has brought to our attention in a terribly vivid way that sort of explanation doesn't work, that there is something special and extraordinary about who we are and why we are all so different from each other.
James, it's really fascinating to hear you explore these kinds of things. What kind of feedback have you had from others within the scientific and medical fraternities of which you both write with some of these ideas?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, this is, in a sense, quite a subversive book because it asks us to, look again at, science's claims to explain everything and points out that actually it doesn't explain everything.
Oh.
And that there is more about the living world and about our role in it, more than we can know. That there is this profound, unanswerable questions about who we are and where we come from, and which always was, in a sense, the great impetus to religious belief, that the sense that there was, a great mystery of what we were doing here.
Oh.
So the book itself has fallen on quite stony ground in predictable circles. I mean, basically amongst, science writers and reviewers and so on, the response tends to be rather critical. But then on the other hand, I have had hundreds of letters from around the world from people who read it who said, it's the greatest book they've ever read.
Yes,
well,
I
exaggerate a bit, but
how,
in a sense, I've sort of articulated ideas that they've had, or how well I've brought it all together, and so on.
You include, as part of your kind of ideas for reinvigorating science along these lines, a sympathy for religion. Where would that leave you personally on the notion of a creator or some sort of designer to the world?
I think that one is in, I personally feel that inescapably, there's something more going on than we can tell.
And
something, as it were, vastly greater than ourselves. And this is the great, this is the great wonder of all, of all religions.
Mm.
I put that right badly. Of all societies, there's this line that somehow that religion is a sort of social phenomenon and of people who, seeking succor of some form or other.
Mm.
But actually, it's the other way around. It seems to me that all societies are essentially religious societies.
That's
right. To say, underlying them all is this fundamental recognition of there being more than we can know, that there's something special and wonderful about our world which cannot be explained away in terms of atoms and molecules.
Yeah, so I think in this book you've hinted at the degree of order in the world and the universals, whether they be the four fundamental universal forces in the world, gravity, etc., or just the structure that we see in the cell or the eyeball or whatever it might be. All of those, for me personally, just all point towards some sort of creator being, that's for sure. Well, look, it's fascinating talking to you, James. Thanks so much for your time. I've really appreciated it.
Thank you very much for inviting me to your program. Yeah. Very grateful.
James Lefanu there, who is a medical doctor, a writer, a columnist. He's the author of a number of books, the latest of which is called Why Us? How Science Rediscovered the Mystery of Ourselves through Harper Books.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.